Baron Nathan, and you talk about trades and writing it back Mueller group. So
I have to start with apology or history. So David Liebland asked me to give this talk, and the talk is based on an article written 16 years ago, I believe, or maybe 15. And that was so long ago that, you know, I reread the article in preparation for giving this talk, and I remember the basic principle, but not the details, and far from the from knowing the deal. So the details. So please be forgiving if I you know, I'm not talking about my recent work on which I'm expected to truly understand. Okay? Anyway, the abstract is in front of you. And you should also have the handout in front of you, and that's what the handout looks like. Okay? And let me start by saying that I'm following a paper by Drinfold, in which, for all I know, this is the first place where the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group was introduced. So I guess I should have started. I'm talking about the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group, and the reason is that people ask me to say what it is. So I'll say what it is. This is roughly how Drinfold introduces the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group. And I think that's part of the reason why the subject has a reputation that it is hard to penetrate. So basically, he throws formulas out at you. So the group GRT is the set of all power series in here in a Frege algebra that satisfy certain equations that appear to be completely arbitrary. You really don't know where they came from. And when you look at the group law looks, again, like a complete mess, and it's not at all clear why even this is a group, okay? And, you know, then comes the definition of the Lie algebra of that group, and all I can say about it is that it's the same. So it just looks completely arbitrary. And then he says, well, that group acts freely and transitively on some set, and I'm skipping the definition of the set and the definition of the action. I'll just tell you that the proof that it acts freely and transitively, again, looks like a completely undecipherable thing if you read it, okay? So, there's nothing that appears to be conceptual in it. Okay? So the main purpose of the talk is to make it conceptual, to explain where this all comes from conceptually. Now, you saw a picture of Drinfold before. Here's another. So this is meant to be a compliment. There is no doubt whatsoever that Drinfold understood everything that I'm going to say today. If you look in his paper, you see the occasional hint, one word hint, that suggests that he understands everything. Okay? So he is the great Master Jedi who knows everything, except he doesn't always speak in a language that us mortals understand. So my role in the business was only to interpret the Grey Jedi. Okay? And even that happened 16 years ago, so I by now I forgot everything. Anyway, let me start by the overall story, the overall picture, and I'm afraid the green came out a little bit dark. A little bit too faded. Okay? But you're supposed to look only at the green, only at what is printed in green. This is the overall picture, and the black is the details that fit into that overall picture, that make up that overall picture. Okay? So the overall picture is that there is some fancy algebraic structure called B, okay? and the content of the B-box is the definition of this algebraic structure and a few properties. And there is another fancy algebraic structure called C, and the content of the C-box is the definition of it. Let me say that B is somehow natural. I mean, the definition doesn't look like it, but there is actually a good reason. There are good reasons to study B. It's not an arbitrary creature. Furthermore, C is completely canonically associated with B. In other words, B is filtered, and C is its associated graded. Now, generally speaking, filtered things are isomorphic to their associated graded as vector spaces. And the claim is that for the particular case of this B and this C, they are also isomorphic as whatever they are, the other fancy structure that they have. So they're really categories with some extra bells and whistles. Okay? So they are isomorphic in the most sophisticated sense there could be. However, the isomorphism is not canonical. In general, the isomorphism between a filtered space and its associated gradient is not canonical, and this isomorphism is not canonical either. So, in fact, there is a whole set of isomorphisms, and I will claim later that this set of isomorphisms is the thing that Drinfeld called associators. So the thing which is often called associator is really an isomorphism, or can be thought of as an isomorphism between two pieces of algebraic structures, in fact between a structure and its associated gradient. But once you see the picture this way, the presence of a group that acts on the set of associators simply transitively is automatic. Namely, whenever you have two isomorphic structures, there is a group that acts, in fact there are two groups that act simply transitively on the set of isomorphisms between them. Namely, one is the set of automorphisms of the domain object, and the other is the set of automorphisms of the target object. So, in fact, the one that Drinfeld calls the Grothendieck-Teichmuller group is the set of automorphisms of this object, and the one that everybody refers to, like Thomas Wilbacher, who spoke about it a few weeks ago, is this one. But again, they are close relatives, and in fact they are isomorphic, except not canonically. That's it.
What's the PNP green box on the bottom?
Oh, PAP, not PNP. We'll come to it later. It's actually not really green. I mean, this should come later. Okay. Anyway, let's start describing the structures. But in fact, before that, let me talk about the baby example. So the baby example is, it's the same thing except without the bells and the whistles. Okay? So let P, B, N be the pure braid group on N strands. So, by the way, this group is well understood. Okay, for example, it's an iterated semi-direct product of three groups. The structure is understood. Deciding whether two elements are the same or not is not difficult. It's a well-known creature. Just to be clear, what is the pure braid group? So the pure braid group is the group of all pictures that look like braids. So you have strands that go from the top to the bottom, and that are allowed to go either over or under each other. Pure means that the permutation that this induces is the identity. So this is not the pure braid group, but if I'll add another crossing, it will be. It will be a pure braid. It's a group by stacking things on top of each other. And in fact, it's the group generated by, well, there are many ways to write a presentation for this group, but one way is to say that it is generated by elements called sigma ij, and again, you have to mod out by some relations, which I will not write, but the sigma ij's are these elements. So they look like the identity almost everywhere, except strand number j goes under everything and under I, and then back above I, and then under everything back again to its original place. Okay? Good. Now, consider the group ring of the pure braid group. And inside the group ring, there is an ideal called the augmentation ideal. So this is the collection of all linear combinations of the form sum of ai sigma I, where ai is a rational number and sigma is a braid, such that the sum of the ai's is equal to zero. Okay? The moment you have an ideal, it automatically defines a filtration, because the ideal I is contained in the full thing, but it contains its second power, and it contains its third power, and so on. So the pure braid group is a graded object. Sorry, not the pure braid group. The group ring of the pure braid group.
Filtered object.
Sorry, filtered object. You're right. I said before that I'm going to construct, that I'm going to have an object B and an object C. So in fact, there are several objects B that I will consider, and likely and correspondingly several objects C. So specifically, fix some number M, and then you can consider the mth B object, and the mth B object is just the braid group, the group ring of the pure braid group, in which you ignore everything in the filtration, which is of degree, which lives in place higher than m plus 1. So in other words, it's Q B B N modulo the ideal raised to the power m plus 1. Now, this is again a filtered object, because you can just push all of these things down to here. But it has a finite filtration, because the m plus first part of the filtration is already zero, because that's what we've modded out by. Okay? And now also, these BMs form an inverse system. So in other words, you have a map going from BM minus 1 into BM into BM plus 1, etc. Inverse system. So the maps go the other way. So you can take the inverse limit. So let B hat be the inverse limit of all of the BMs. And again, this is a filtered object. So all of these objects have associated gradients. So let C up M be the associated graded of B up M and let C tilde be the associated graded of, sorry, C hat be the associated graded of B hat. And it's very easy to show that GER, that the degree M dis of each of these, so the degree M dis of any of these, so certainly this is true for C hat, and the degree K dis of any of these. Certainly this is true for K hat, for C hat, and it's also true for these, provided that M is bigger than K.
You don't have
okay?
A statement yet.
Is equal to, what?
Okay, I was gonna say you don't have a statement yet.
Now I do, now I do. Is equal to the degree K piece of some fixed algebra C. And let me tell you what the fixed algebra C is. So the fixed algebra C is the free associative but not commutative algebra generated by symbols Tij, where, like here, I and j run between 1 and n and are different from each other, okay? Where Tij is declared equal to Tji. And now I do want to write the relations. So subject to two relations. One relation is, I like to call it locality, but it says that Tij commutes with Tkl provided all of these indices are different from each other. So I will not write it, but the convention will be that if I write four indices, or if I write two indices in some formula, I mean, they're all different, okay? And also modulo the relation, the so-called 4T relation, which says that the bracket of Tij with Tik plus Tjk is equal to zero. So I think these are called the together the Greenfeld relations, but I could be wrong about the name. This is something that I might have not even known 16 years ago. But I don't even remember if I knew the name ever or not. Okay? Anyway, let me give you a very quick plausibility argument. Okay? I will not quite prove it. The proof is, in fact, quite sophisticated, quite involved. I mean, well, not hugely involved, but somewhat involved. But I will give you a plausibility argument. Okay? So the plausibility argument goes as follows. I will construct a map from the degree k. Oh, this k is not the same as the k that appears there as a superscript. Okay? So I will construct a map from the degree k piece of C into the ideal raised to the power k divided by the ideal raised to the power k plus 1, the augmentation ideal to the k modulo the augmentation ideal to the k plus 1. And I will claim, but not prove, that this map is an isomorphism. Okay? The map is, well, you map a product of Tij's, so you'll map a product of the form product alpha goes from 1 to k of Ti alpha j alpha into a product, now it's in the braid group product, of sigma I alpha j alpha, where sigma is the same thing that's written here, minus 1, so just take this product in the group ring, okay? Now, since this is a product of n things, each of which is a difference with sum of coefficients equal to zero. So each of these is an element of the ideal, and since I take a product of k of these things, this belongs to I to the k, and I may as well consider it in I to the k modulo I to the k plus 1. Now, it's not terribly difficult to verify that the Drinfeld-Konnor relations are satisfied by this map. Okay, so the map is well defined, and it's a bit harder to show that it has an inverse, but it can be done. Okay, so let me sort of just sketch the verification of 4T. Okay, so the verification of 4T goes as follows. In fact, it's a bit easier while verifying 4T to use non-pure braids. An impure braid could be a part, so really what I'm saying is that I'm not drawing the rest of the picture, which will make this picture into a pure braid. Okay? So while verifying, I will draw an impure braid, but it's just a part of the picture that I'm going to draw. Now, this impure braid, sorry, it has three strands, I forgot to write the third. This one is equal to this impure braid, in which the third strand, instead of going above, under everything, goes above everything. Okay? Saying that these two are equal means that their difference is equal, well, it's the same as saying that their difference is equal to zero in the group ring, okay? But on the other hand, this difference is the sum of four differences. The four differences that you get by flipping this crossing, and then that crossing, and then that one, and then that one, okay? Now, each of these four differences can be interpreted as being in the image of this map. And so, each of these differences, and so the sum of four things in the image of this map is equal to zero. And this is precisely the statement of the 4T relation, right? It says that the sum of four things is equal to zero, right? The commutator of this with this, this times this the other way, this times this, and this times this the other way. Okay? So this is very roughly the proof, but it's not much harder. And one further thing to say about C, about the algebra C. So one reason why I call it C is because it's often called the algebra of chord diagrams. So a chord diagram is a diagram built on a skeleton made with n strands labeled from 1 to n, and the chords are denoted by, the so-called chords are horizontal lines connecting these strands, and a picture like this represents a product. Well, so this is T12, this is T23, this is T24, and this picture altogether represents T12 times T23 times T24. Okay? And in this language, the 4T relation becomes the equation, the equality written here. Okay? Okay, now, claim, and as I said, this is not an easy claim. The map I've written off, I've specified over there, is an isomorphism. Or in other words, the objects B are isomorphic to the objects C. Okay, now, the reason I called it a baby example is because the main thing is sort of this with some bells and whistles attached. Okay? The reason I've added a question mark after the word baby is because, to my knowledge, this example was never analyzed from a Grothendieck-Teichmuller perspective the way the following thing will be analyzed. In other words, for all I know, nobody ever wrote the automorphism group of B, of the B objects, the automorphism groups of the B objects and of the C objects. For all I know, nobody ever bothered to compute their dimensions. I don't think they're understood.
Well, what structure is B, should we think of BM having?
BM?
Should we think of it as just a quotient of a group ring? Or
yeah, it's a group, it's a ring.
Ring.
Okay, is it a ring? Yeah, it's
filtered
a
ring.
It's a filtered ring, and it's essentially braids when you forget the where you forget high order differences. This will have a better meaning in a second. Okay, and sorry, I guess there are still two more comments I want to make. So first of all, what is it all good for? Okay, so. In the case of the braid group, it's not good for much because as I said, the braid group is well understood. Okay? But in principle, the B objects are global objects, are topological objects. So this happens to be uninteresting topological, or well, interesting but well understood topological objects. But in principle, the beta side will involve topological objects, and it might be hard to tell them apart. Furthermore, it might be hard to decide whether they have certain properties, whether they you know, whether one object is conjugate to another, for example. Okay? On the other hand, on the C side, you have graded stuff, and if you restrict your attention to degree less than 22, you have a finite dimensional object. So on the C side, stuff is computable. Stuff is you can hold it. Okay? So if you are able to find a group homomorphism from here to here, sorry, not a group homomorphism, a ring, a multiplicative map from here to here, then first of all, it will allow you to separate, it will help you to separate objects here, to tell when two are different. In other words, you're constructing invariants. And furthermore, suppose you wanted to show that two things here are not conjugate. Well, if they're not conjugate here, they're certainly not conjugate here. So you at least, or if their images here are not conjugate, then they're certainly not conjugate here. So you can get some information about topology from algebra the moment you can you construct an isomorphism going from here to here. Now, so this is, for this purpose, this is a baby case. And the example I will write in a moment, in fact, let's put it on the blackboard again. So the example to follow is slightly more interesting from this perspective. And in fact, the main way in which it is interesting is that it is a part of the construction of an even more complicated, of yet another such isomorphism, which involves knots. And I'm going to draw only braids and talk only about braids, but the story has a lift for knots. And when you tell it about knots, it becomes a genuinely interesting not invariant, and which may or may not answer genuinely interesting questions about knot theory. Okay? So at some level, even this is a baby example. Yes?
If you pick some arbitrary group, discrete group, instead of this pure braid group, is it true that this usually not... I mean, you can imagine defining everything you define. Is it true that usually there's no isomorphism?
My best guess is that the answer is that yes, that usually there is no isomorphism. Though I don't know of a single example where I can prove that there is no isomorphism. I know examples where I don't know how to construct an isomorphism, but okay. And you know, one last comment before I move on to that slide. Suppose you compose Z, so we have a map from the braid world to some world of algebra, and suppose you compose it with a linear functional into the base field, let's call it phi, which is supported on some fixed degree. Then the composition is a map from the B world to the ground field. I don't know, call it phi composed with Z. And it's a numerical invariant of braids, which vanishes on, so if phi is of degree K, then it vanishes on the augmentation ideal raised to the power k plus 1. If you've ever seen the definition of finite type invariant of braids or of knots, then this is precisely it. So in this guise, I'm really studying the theory of finite type invariants when I'm talking about these things. Okay, so on to the B object that will define the Grothendieck-Kleitmüller group. So, okay, instead of pure braids, we talk about parenthesized braids. Okay, a parenthesized braid is a braid such as this one that has a parenthetization of the objects that appear, of the ends that appear at the bottom, and a parenthetization of the ends that appear at the top. Okay? So, I think the picture is the picture sufficiently clear? I think it is. Okay? Now, parenthesized braids. So this parenthesized braid is somehow not the identity, because as a braid it's trivial, but it goes from one parenthetization into another one. Okay? And I think also my convention of how I mark parenthetization should be clear. I things that are parenthesized close together, I draw as being close together geometrically. Okay? Anyway. So parenthesized braids are no longer a group, but instead they are a category. They are a category whose objects are parenthetizations, and the morphisms between one parenthetization and another parenthetization is the set of all braids whose ends are parenthesized as prescribed. Okay? The composition is stacking things on top of each other as before, and of course you can compose if the parenthetization at the top of one object is equal to the parenthetization at the bottom of the next object. Now, any parenthesized braid has a skeleton. Okay? The skeleton of a parenthesized braid is that same parenthesized braid, except that you forget the over-under information. So all that remains is what I call a parenthesized permutation. Okay? So it's a permutation, except you parenthesize the top and the bottom. Okay? So said differently, there is a functor from parenthesized braids to the category of parenthesized permutations, which will not be graced with a formal definition right now. Okay? I will allow myself, so sort of the thing parallel to switching to the group ring will be, I will allow myself to take formal linear combinations of parenthesized braids that have the same skeleton. Okay? Now, so, you know, if you want to say it differently, a parenthesized, well, a linear combination, or a full description of an object or of a morphism in this category is a pair, a permutation, followed by a linear combination of braids whose skeleton is that permutation. Okay? Now, within PAB, there is an obvious sort of ideal, I guess ideal in some category theoretical sense, but I think it's clear what an ideal in a category is. So there is an ideal defined by those linear combinations whose sum of coefficients is equal to zero. That's the parallel of the augmentation ideal. And just like for ordinary braids, I can form powers of this ideal. And then I can mod out by power. I have an M version where I mod out by the M plus first power of that ideal. Okay. Now that category, in fact, has additional structure. So one structure is the skeleton functor into parenthesized tangles. Another piece of structure is some sort of a coproduct, which I will not define, which is not essential to understanding anything, so I'll skip it. There is also some fixed element in it, and I will describe it in a minute. There is some fixed, like a base point, inside that category. And the next thing to describe is operators di and si, that are defined in that category. So the operator D0 takes a parenthesized braid and adds to it a non-interacting strand as the zeroth strand. Okay? So far on the left. So, or if with the parenthetization that makes this the outermost left factor. Okay? The operator D3 adds to this strand, to this parenthesized braid, a non-interacting strand on the right. Okay? The operator D2 takes strand number 2, so here I have 1, 2, 3, and doubles it, so it becomes a double, while making the two Gotter strands infinitesimally separated, or in other words, the bracketing at the ends is innermost. The parenthetizations at the ends is innermost. And finally, the operation S2 takes strand number 2 and drops it and deletes it. So it will delete this strand, and if you do it to this braid, you get this one. Okay? So, as I said, I will not describe the coproduct. It's not terribly interesting. But finally, there is some distinguished element in this category, and it's the sigma. It's the element called sigma. And it's just the crossing of two strands which are parenthesized in the only way two elements can be parenthesized. Okay? So that fully describes the algebraic structure B. Okay, so it is parenthesized braids, which means it has more, well, there are lots of sets involved, and there are some composition operations between these sets, so as the resulting thing is a category. There is a skeleton factor, there are doubling and strand addition operations, there are strand deletions operations, and there is a fixed point somewhere inside. Okay? And now let me describe the object C, which is really the associated graded of the object P. Okay? So, first of all, the thing that plays the role of chord diagrams are what I will call parenthesized chord diagrams. And parenthesized chord diagrams are really parenthesized permutations with chords added in a similar manner to how they've been added here, and modulo 4t just as before. Okay? Where the product is, the product of two chord diagrams, so this is a chord diagram of degree 1 because it has one chord in it, this is a chord diagram of degree 2 because it has two chords in it, the product is just stacking the two on top of each other with the understanding that you can slide chords across permutations. So if you slide this one down, well, it flips over, but it's still a chord between the last two. And if you slide this one down, it becomes this chord. Okay? So I think I've defined parenthesized chord diagrams. Okay. There is a skeleton functor into parenthesized permutations, and it's just the thing, well, it's just forget all the chords, leave just the skeleton. And then there are operations DI and SI. And in principle, I don't even need to tell you what they are, because there are, if you have an operator acting on a filtered space and it preserves the filtration, then there is a corresponding operator acting on the associated graded. And that's what DI and SI are. Okay? But if you want, I can tell you what they are explicitly. So for example, D2 applied to this chord diagram would mean double the middle skeleton component. If you double it, then a chord that did not touch the middle skeleton component is unaffected, but this chord and that chord don't know where to end. They could end either here or here. So the D2 operation is you take the sum of all ways of connecting this chord to either this or that, and this chord to either this or that. So that's what you get. Okay? D0 is defined by adding a non-interacting skeleton piece on the left. D4, in this case, would add a non-interacting skeleton piece on the right. And the S operators, well, you know what? They're not important. Let's keep them. Okay? Sorry, I'm also running out of time. Here are one or three distinguished elements in the category of parenthesized chord diagrams. So X is the parenthesized chord diagram whose skeleton is written here and which has no chords. So it's a degree element, degree zero element. H is the parenthesized chord diagram that looks like this picture. I guess previously it was called, it's the same as T12, essentially, in C. And finally, R tilde is X times the exponential of H over 2, which amounts to saying that R tilde is a chord diagram whose skeleton is an X, and which contains on top of the skeleton a product of H's. So it will contain H to the K with coefficient 1 over K factorial, and of course you sum over all K's. And it makes sense in some completion, or if you chop in some finite degree, it makes sense. In either case, it makes sense.
Also 1 over 2 to the k?
What?
Is there also 1 over 2 to the k? Because it's x.
Oh, yes, there is also 1 over 2 to the k because it's h over 2. You're right. Sorry. And I suppose the object C is now completely well-defined. The algebraic structure C is now completely well-defined. It's made out of parenthesized chord diagrams, it has a skeleton, and there are some auxiliary operations on that category. An associator is an isomorphism of the object P to the object C, which intertwines everything that appears here. So it maps a composition in this category to a composition in this category. It carries something with a given skeleton to something with the same skeleton, and it commutes with the DI's SI box, and finally it maps sigma to R tilde. Now, you may have seen associators described in a different language before, so let me make the correspondence between today's language and the more standard language. The point is that the category of parenthesized braids is finitely generated. It is generated by two specific elements, the element sigma mentioned before, and the elements A defined now. And it's kind of clear because, it's the parallel of the first year algebra fact that you can commute any, or you can bring any product to any other form by using associativities and commutativities. So this is where the associativities come from, and this is where the commutativities come from. Furthermore, not only this category is finitely generated, it's in fact finitely presented. And I skipped a bunch of uninteresting relations, and I'm only telling you that there are a few interesting relations. Namely, the product of three A's, as written here, is equal to the product of two A's, as written here. More precisely, this is D3 of A, because we've added a strand on the right. This is this is D4 of A, because we've added a strand on the right. This is D2 of A, this is D0 of A. So D4A, D2A, D0A is equal to D1A, D3A. Okay? And there is also a secondary relation, or a second relation called the hexagon relation, and it's drawn here. It relates A and sigma, and I will not read it out. Now, suppose you had a morphism from this category to the category of chord diagrams, of parenthesized chord diagrams. Well, since these elements generate, it's enough to specify the morphism on these two elements. Well, on this element, it was already specified to be R tilde. So the only thing remaining is to specify the image of A. The image of A, call it phi, and it will have to, whatever it is, it will have to satisfy these relations if I want this morphism to be well defined. So it will have to satisfy this equation, the pentagon equation, and this equation, which is the hexagon equation. And if you've seen associators before, these are exactly the equations. And in fact, at this point, I've completely established that the set of associators, sorry, the set of associators is equal to the set of isomorphisms between B and C. Now, the Grothendieck-Tagmuller group is the set of automorphisms of C. If I want to understand it, I have to present C using generators and relations. Here are the generators. The relations include many boring ones, but also the pentagon as before, and two hexagons. One hexagon in which all crossings are made into permutations, and another sort of variant of the hexagon in which you throw in a chord in various places. Again, if I had time, this is absolutely a reasonable thing, but I don't have time. Okay? So therefore, So therefore, the Grothendieck-Tagmuller group can be described by formulas, and here are the formulas. These are the same as the formulas that Greenfield writes. And then, what is it all good for? So the main theorem is the fact that the canonical projection from associators of degree m to associators up to degree m minus 1 is surjective. Now, why is it good? Let me say very, very briefly. It's good because it tells you that you can construct associators iteratively. So if you have an associator to degree m minus 1, there is always an inverse image, and furthermore, you can check that this inverse image is defined by finitely many, or can be found by solving finitely many linear equations. So not only my B and C are isomorphic, but in fact, you can construct the isomorphism in some algorithmic way. And in particular, it follows that you can find a rational isomorphism. It follows, and there is a certain result by Ferocio that follows from that too, but I guess I'll skip it. The sketch of the proof is that in order to show that the map from between associators is surjective, it's enough to show, by very simple logic, it's enough to show that at group level, this map is surjective. By some algebraic geometry, the statement at the group level follows from the statement at Lie algebra level, but these Lie algebras are graded, and if all the relations are homogeneous, you can just extend by zero. I mean, the inverse image of a thing here would be that thing with zero added in degree m. So therefore, this is surjective. Once you've shown that all the relations are homogeneous, this takes a little effort, and in fact, this is how the effort is done, but I definitely don't have time to tell you about it, and I think I'm done. Yes?
Why is this group connected to a Galois group? To the Galois group of Cuba or Q?
I have no clue. Sorry. Yes?
I have a couple questions. So this is this little piano that you have here. This is where A would get mapped to?
This what?
Your
gamma is the image of A, yes.
Okay. And then, second question, kind of not so related, but you wrote this paper by Greenfield?
Yeah.
Is it possible to find this paper? I couldn't find it in the library.
You come to me after the talk and I give you a copy.
Okay.
Also, in the paper, you give a reference to one of your papers and there is a number one. And is there two?
There was meant to be a number two, but number two never materialized. So the answer is no.
Okay. All right. So let's
Thank you.